a podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. This is Manna.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Manna, a podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. I'm your host, Jeff Peterson. Now, none of the guys that you're going to meet on this podcast would consider themselves to be extraordinary, but it's their humble, holy way of living. That's exactly what makes them extra to me, and I'm very excited for you to meet them. Now, we are all familiar with, and we have unwittingly used the phrase voice of God in our more dramatic speech moments, you know, and some of our Manna guests have actually heard the voice of God throughout their faith journeys. But today's guest reminds me of a very specific application of those three words that some of you might not be familiar with. Now, for all of my fellow theater geeks out there, you know exactly where this is heading. So, quoting the ever dependable Wikipedia here, and I quote, the generic term voice of God is commonly used in theatrical productions and staging and refers to any anonymous, disembodied voice used to deliver general messages to the audience. Examples may include speaker introductions, audience directions, and performer substitutions. So now you know what that's called when you've been sitting in a concert hall and all of a sudden they announce how long the intermission is going to be. You know, that's the voice of God, okay? And evidently he needs you all to go to the bathroom and get your drink and be back in your seat in 10 minutes. So how does all of this relate to today's guest? Well, first off, he is indeed of the theater, so to speak. Specifically, he is a voice actor who has lent his distinct baritone to many commercial and creative endeavors, making them all sound even better and smarter and more worldly than they probably are. But that's more of a side hustle, as he's been busy traveling the world his whole life, creating and crafting a long and successful career in the global hospitality industry, leveraging his own international roots and sensibilities to help big brand U.S.-based hotel companies and other companies grow. But back to the voice of God thing, which you'll soon hear for yourself. Our guest's literal voice, okay, commands and conjures a level of reverence, attention, and awe that is blessedly befitting of, you guessed it, a church lector, which he also is, and which by doing so, he gives all of us who are sitting in the pews a great example of putting all of our God-given talents to the best of uses, which is in glorifying God. So he also holds the unique distinction here of being our first and maybe only Dutch Manna man. So he's a Manna Dutchman. So please welcome all the way from the Netherlands, Mr. Jetsy Pottinga. And I don't have the roll on the G there, but welcome, Jetsy.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. Thank you. But that was wonderful.
Well, you deserve much more, but I'm a little self-conscious here being on the mic with yourself. And I know all of our listeners now are just waiting for me to shut up so they can listen to you to you speak. Okay. Well, and I was sheepish in going straight for the voice thing in your intro, because I'm sure you spent your whole life, you know, being kind of accosted by it. It's kind of like being a tall kid, you know, and everyone's asking you, like, oh, you must play basketball. But, you know, but as long as I've gone there, let's just get it out of the way and be done with it. But, you know, when did you realize that you had this wonderful gift of voice?
Well, interesting. My whole family has a typical voice like I do. Mm. All my brothers sound like that. And it wasn't really in later in life that when you get into public speaking and especially reading in church, that people come up to you and say, wow, you know, I can listen to you all day. You know, can you read a whole Bible for me? And in business life as well, it helps get people's attention. It helps in many ways. But I never really dreamt about using it professionally till later. When I was after the hotel business, I was doing real estate and Again, people mention it. They say, you really should be on radio. So I started studying it and then got my equipment. And that's kind of how it started officially. Mm. Although many ladies have pointed out to me that they like the voice.
Yes, it's been put to use years before the professional training. Well, you know, I mentioned, and you just mentioned it too, that you do use your voice to great heightened benefit and blessings as a lector. And I was wondering, you know, obviously you've used your voice, you've prepared for speeches, mm-hmm. different gigs. And I hate to be heretical saying that, you know, reading, you know, in church is a gig, but what is the process or is the process in preparing for the Sunday readings? How is that process different for you? You know, because you're very faith-filled. Mm-hmm. And so do you prepare for that reading differently than you would, you know, some deodorant commercial?
You do, because you, I am aware that when I read out of the Bible that it needs to mean something to the people in the pews. And the better I portray, especially St. Paul can be terribly complicated. Yeah. So reading St. Paul in a way that people will actually understand it is important to me. Maybe not the theatrical side of it, because you don't want to put the attention on the wrong side of your voice. Mm-hmm. You want to deliver the message as precise and as clear as possible. So I take my time in reading and rereading and then putting, you know, pauses in between so that that the audience actually listens to it and understands it. Listening to the voice is one thing, but to actually understand what's being said is mm-hmm. the most important part.
Yeah. Well, and like you're saying, to keep the focus where it's intended. There's a few years back, I was watching something on YouTube, some preacher, and she started she's a Baptist minister down in the South, and she started her sermon, and I'm going to hack this, but it was essentially what she said. It was a prayer. She said, Lord, hide me at the foot of your cross so that in my words, basically they don't hear my words, they only see you.
Yeah.
And I can say as a parishioner, whenever you read, Jetsy, that is exactly what happens. You're able to elevate people and bring people to just the word, you know, and you just happen to be this wonderful channel for it.
And I enjoy doing it. I mean, I really do. I just got the roster for the rest of the year. I think I'm reading 4 or 5 times. And I enjoy that because sitting in church myself and listening to other readers, you do the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, what is being said here? And do I really get it? And so I enjoy doing that. And people do. People come up to me.
Yeah.
Well, compliment me on
it amplifies the experience. All right, so we're going to get off of that now, but we're going to stay on a little bit of the unique aspects here mm-hmm. that you're bringing to Matt. I mentioned, and as our listeners are hearing, you don't sound like a small town Minnesota kid like me. And so, growing up in the Netherlands, I did a little research here. That's kind of an interesting statistic here. Did you know, and all of you, did you know that? And again, this is according to some websites, so you know it's true, more than half, so 55% of Dutch people, okay, in a recent survey, claim to not be religious. In the survey found that 55% did not, ascribe to any kind of religious sort of order. 20% belonged to the Catholic Church, 14% were Protestant, 5% Muslim, and 5% belonged to kind of a miscellaneous. So, I thought that was fascinating. I don't know how other countries compare. I don't even know how the United States compares. But tell us about growing up in the Netherlands and what was religion like.
Well, it was very religious. Mm. And in particular, I remember that in the northern part of the Netherlands, it's where the Protestants lived. And in the southern part, the Catholics. And like the majority of people that go to church. And a lot of people went to church. It how this has changed just makes me wonder.
Yeah.
You know, how do we screw this up?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because at that time, I remember we you know, the Catholics couldn't play soccer before 2 o'clock because they on Sundays because they had to go.
Yeah.
To church, and the Protestants could only play on Saturdays, and so you had, you know, you had one football team, but it was one for Saturday, one for Sunday. So it was all very much related to religion.
Yeah. How about your family specifically? Were you guys a fairly religious family?
No. And it's weird. None of my family went to church.
Hmm.
Only my mother. Let's say would have a relationship to church and suggested to me that I go to Sunday school. None of my brothers have. I did, and it was actually a Methodist Sunday school, not Catholic at all. And I got the vibe.
Yeah.
Somehow stayed with me for the rest of my life, although going to school and maybe to college, it kind of, it's not as much in the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always in the back of my mind. Until I met my wife, she was Catholic. And so we went to Catholic church. And we lived in Canada. And I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't just sit in church and not go up and you know, get the bread
mm-hmm.
and the wine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, because you weren't Catholic at the time.
No,
right.
And I didn't feel that I could.
Yeah.
And because I felt a Christian, I really did. So that's when I've decided to go to RCIA and become Catholic, and mm-hmm. I got baptized at I guess I was in my 30s,
mm-hmm.
and this was fantastic. I mean, getting baptized at that age means a lot because you can comprehend all that,
right.
and you know, I sometimes, you know, I said, I wish that more people could get baptized at an older age, because it was so impactful.
Yeah.
Now, I guess Father John will argue with that, which he has with me. But to me, it meant a lot, and I'm not sure if I became a better Catholic, but I definitely became more aware and more involved.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a little bit of the history.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, though. I think that any kind of adult, that's a very fancy word here, but any kind of adult catechesis, I think, is so important. And actually, I agree with you specifically on baptism. I remember a couple of years ago, I was helping out with RCIA, and we were going through the baptism whatever chapter or whatever they call it. And I said, you know, there should be a rebaptism. You know, mm-hmm. we should do it again.
Yeah.
And the comparison I was making is when you renew your vows, when you get married, you know, 20 years in, renew your vows, you know? And so I thought, gosh, and somebody very gently in the room reminded me, and I've actually thought of this every time, that when we walk into a sanctuary and cross ourselves with holy water, that's kind of it, you know, that's kind of like reminding ourselves of those baptismal waters and what that meant. And so I still, there's part of me that still would love to have an actual ceremony, but I do think about that now every time I do that.
Interesting. Yeah. I did RCA. I helped out here as well.
Yeah.
I remember when we first did this full, being baptized underwater. I don't know if you remember that, but we got this big tub and we filled it up with water completely. And then at Easter,
yeah,
and it was so cold. that was so cold. And so the person, you know, had to go in, and it was all kind of, you know, the next day it was all gone. It was interesting. Yeah, good times.
Yeah. So with your sort of faith journey from as a Protestant, now Catholic, mm-hmm. you know, if when people meet you today, mm-hmm. I mean, they're definitely meeting a very engaged, very influential, you know, man of faith. Do you feel like that evolution has just been gradual over time, or was there a moment, whether it was your Catholic confirmation or after, that you really felt like, okay, I'm really, you know, I've really dialed it into a sixth gear?
Well, I think it's been a gradual process. Okay. Raising the children, you know, part of that is make sure that they, you know, they believe in God and that they believe in Jesus and that they participate. Mm-hmm. So you follow that process. It's more of late, basically after I reflect on my life and on the great life I've had. I'm so grateful for what God has given me. Yeah. And you want to do something in return. You want to say, well, what can I do? Okay, yeah. I'm reading in church. Back in Orlando, I was participating with helping the poor. You know, twice a week or at least once a week, we would go out and visit the poor and help them with his accommodation. And so I did that, and I felt good about that. But still, there's still something nagging inside me that says, you know, yes, there is more there. And what is it? And but I'm working through that process. I mean, I'm looking for opportunities to get my message across and to help other people, to revive the church.
Yeah.
I mean, I told you earlier on how in the Netherlands now, I mean, churches are closing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're basically bulldozing them down. And it's such a shame because the church has so many things to offer.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many good people within the church, and you know, and I believe that somehow I want to be part of that revival process about, you know, how can we get people back to church?
I mentioned earlier, and you know, you being born, you know, in the Netherlands, and then but then you traveled extensively. You lived in a lot of different places, and your work took you to a lot of different places. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that sort of secularization or erosion kind of consistently over time across all of these different countries? Or are in all of your travels, were there some countries where you just felt like, okay, no, this is totally like lit up and, you know, it's so deeper. Yeah. What was it like moving around so much?
Well, fortunately, I have been able to kind of visit kind of the world, as they say. I mean, I've spent considerable time in South America and Central America. Not as much in Africa, but India, Australia, and Japan. And probably Europe is the one that's gone kind of down most. Mm. I think the countries that aren't that well developed and where the where the messages are still relatively common and not as advanced as technology, that probably there is still, you know, good amount of people that go to church or call themselves Christians.
Yeah.
But probably it wasn't long enough in each country to say, now I've got a handle on this. Mostly it was business visits. So I couldn't really 100% say that, you know, that country, that was fantastic.
Yeah. But I wonder, you know, if you think of Christianity and the whole message of surrender, of service, of reminding ourselves every day that we can do nothing without God. Nothing. Mm. Not just less, nothing. Mm. I wonder if there's any correlation between countries or communities that are highly developed, you know, that have, whether it's technology or socioeconomically, or they've really advanced to a point where maybe, and here's the unvalidated hypothesis here, is that, you know, people growing up in those societies, they don't need.
I think you're right, actually. I mean, if you think about it, most countries that have a great amount of technology and online, and they're getting really busy doing all kinds of stuff rather than reading the Bible or go to church.
Distracted,
They're tremendously distracted. And I think, you're right. They probably don't see the need, or they may have found another outlet, being it the gaming or whatever, betting online or whatever the case may be. It's sad in many ways.
Yeah.
But I was thinking back on last Sunday about the message that what does God give us? And this was where the people got paid. Remember the winery and the people who worked all day, they started grumbling and the landowner says, well, I can give whatever I want. Now, if you imagine that what the landowner is God, and God gives us the grace and the power to live and the peace, you cannot break that down. You either get it or you don't.
Right.
So you can't get a half a day of peace. I mean, so it was kind of, I read this and I thought, well, it is so true. God is everything, and we are extremely grateful for everything that's happening to us.
Amen. Yeah. All right, well, hey, we are already at the fun segment of the big show here, where we ask the same three questions to every guest and see what they have to say. So, fun segment question number one. If Jesus knocked on your door tomorrow morning and just wanted to hang out with you for the day,
yeah,
you got a whole day with Jesus, what are you doing with Jesus?
Well, I would tell him, you're crazy. Why do you want to hang out with me? I would want him to meet people. I would want him to go to hospitals and heal people. Yeah. I want him to speak to as many people as possible so that they get to know Jesus. I mean, I just could not fathom just having Jesus with me all day.
Yeah.
I asked this to my son-in-law earlier on. I says, I'm going to get asked this question, Andy. So he says, well, take him to golf. I said, Andy, that is not really. But it was a great answer.
Yeah.
Though, but
yeah.
No, I want to share Jesus with other people.
Drive him around. Get him in your little
school.
Grandfather Uber
schools.
There and get him. Yeah, exactly. Right. All right. Fun segment question number two. If you could, and we didn't get a chance to talk about other role models or guys in your life, so I'm excited for you to answer this. If you could go to church with any other guy, living or dead, famous or not, who would you go to Mass with?
Well, I have a friend who lives in Orlando, and I've been kind of working on him a little bit over the years. And, you know, I keep telling him, I can't go to soccer because I'm reading at church. And I'm putting these messages, and I've invited him once or twice. And so far, he has not committed, and I would feel extremely honored if, you know, he would come along and well, maybe there is a spark in there. One never knows. But I was thinking about famous people, but again, I wanted to mean something.
Yeah.
And I guess this friend of mine, that would mean a lot to him and to me probably.
That's great. Well, maybe he's tuning in right now so he can answer that. All right, great. Last question, fun segment question number three. If you could give just one piece of advice to a younger man about living a confident life of faith, what would that piece of advice be?
Well, stay the course. I think there is so much in life that can derail you. Stay with it. Once you feel that you have something in you that is so powerful, stay with it. Continue to live your life in an honest and in a way that people can see that there is sincerity in you, and follow that through as long as you can until you die, basically. Stay with it.
Yeah. Well, simple advice, said eloquently, like everything out of your mouth. And so I want to thank you for being here. And I'm going to ask you to, because everyone, you have to hear how he pronounces his name accurately, because about halfway through here, when you referred to yourself with the soft J, I realized I'm such a dumb American. I called you Jetsy. So say your name for everybody the way you say it.
The Dutch way would be Jetse Pottinga, but that ga is a difficult thing for me. Right, so Pottinga is...
Jetse Pottinga, thank you so much for being here and the great example and giving your voice literally and figuratively and spiritually to so many others to help them get closer to Jesus.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you for listening to Manna. If you have any questions or recommendations for future guests, send them to mannapodcast@gmail.com.